Welcome to A Longer Table Podcast, a space where curiosity and proximity will challenge everything you thought you knew. I'm your host, Amanda Carpenter, inviting you to pull up a seat. You just might leave thinking, maybe we're not so different. I want to tell you about something Ian and I are using to uphold our boundaries in our home that's benefiting our marriage and ensuring that Shia doesn't always see us with our phones in hand. It's called Aro. Aro is a solution for aligning your actions and your intentions. What I mean by that is it's easy to want a life where you spend quality time face to face with your spouse, kids, friends, every single day. But are we willing to do whatever it takes to make that happen? I know I've tried a lot of different techniques and set goals around being unplugged and detached from my phone in order to be fully present, but Aro has been the most effective by far. Here's why. Aro is one part app, one part beautiful box. The Aro app tracks the time that your phone is put away in the box, and the box, which is aesthetically pleasing, by the way, sits on our bar cart in an area of our living room that we spend the most time in. It's a visual cue to put our phones away, an invitation to be intentional. Ian and I will often put our phones in it, forget that they're in there. Later, when we go back to get our phone out, it tells us how much time they were in the box and allows us to actually save, or in other words, log that time as whatever we were doing. So a few recent examples from the last week for me were baking, playing trucks with Shia, park as a family, dinner prep, reading. This is so motivating for me. Aro is a true invitation to do more of the things that we all say matter to us. And I'm telling you, it will change your life. Check out Aro at goaro.com. Use code Manda to get 1 month free when you purchase an annual or 2 year membership. Hannah, thanks for joining me at A Longer Table today.
Thank you so much for having me. It is truly such an honor to be like a guest on this podcast. I can't tell you thank you enough for having me.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've known each other through the internet for a little while. And
yes,
you know, we're both moms. We're both working moms who have podcasts and just have a lot in common.
Yeah.
We also have this common interest in talking about sex, which
yes,
I love.
We do. Me too.
We're not everyone's like type of friend or favorite female to be around, but yep. It's really great that you are so open about sex. And today's episode, we're gonna hone in on painful sex. So
yes,
I want to actually just start with, what is your personal experience with painful sex, and why are you so passionate about discussing this and being open about it? And I mean, you've devoted so much of your career to this very conversation.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear what's on the personal side of it for you.
For sure. But before I get started, I just want to tell you really quick that your statement of there's not a single person you wouldn't love if you didn't know their story, like, really changed my life. Like, it really did, and changed the way that I like talk to people, see people, think about people, and just the way that I act and serve in like my day-to-day life. Like, it really changed my life. And so I just wanted to tell you that, and like, thank you so much for like the advocacy that you do. I learned so much from you and just seriously look up to you. So just like, thank you again for having me on the podcast. I just wanted to say that to you before I jump in, but I'm so excited to talk about painful sex. So a little bit of my story with it is I, you know, grew up Christian, grew up like, you know, hoping that I would, quote, always do the right thing and like not have sex until I was married. Like, I was like, I'm going to do the right thing, and then sex is going to be so great. It's going to be awesome because I, like, you know, am waiting till sex to get, and waiting to have sex until I get married. So it's just going to be perfect and wonderful. So I get married, I have sex, and it's awful. Like, it's so painful, like so, so painful. I could still have sex, but it was extremely painful. And I had painful sex for about a year before I did anything about it. So I just thought, like, this is what sex is like. Like, people don't really talk about sex. They tell you it might hurt, and that's really all I know. Like, no one in my circles are talking about sex. And I keep hearing this thing in my head, you know, just from like purity culture of like, well, if you don't have sex with your husband, he's going to like leave you or cheat on you or not.
Totally.
You know, he's going to treat you a different way if you don't please him. And my husband is like the greatest human on the planet, and he would never do that. But that's just what I was hearing in my head. So I just like literally experienced painful sex for a year. I was really good at hiding it, though. Like, I was really good at, like, you know, acting like it felt good, acting like it wasn't a problem. Cause I just heard all those things in my head of like, you have to be, you know, have to do this for your husband. You have to be sexy for your husband. You have to do all this that a lot of like purity culture says to you. And so I didn't realize that sex wasn't supposed to hurt. I just thought this is what it felt like until about a year into it. And then I was like, you know what? This probably isn't how this is supposed to be. I just started thinking about it more. And I was like, I don't look forward to having sex. This is not really what I thought this was going to be. Like my whole view of like marriage and sex had just kind of like shattered from what I thought it was going to be. And so I was ended up being diagnosed with vaginismus. And then, which is when your pelvic muscles contract when something penetrates. And so that's what I was diagnosed with. And then I went to pelvic floor physical therapy for about 7 months and then ended up being healed. And now I have pain-free sex, which is so great. But what I found during this process was that it was very isolating. I felt very alone. I didn't know a single person in my life who had experienced this. So of course I'm like on the internet, like searching like Facebook groups and just people who've gone through this. Cause I just felt so alone when I was diagnosed with vaginismus. And everything I found was just like really negative, like really just like, you're going to have this forever. Like there's really no hope. Or I've been, you know, trying to, you know, experience healing for years and I've never been healed. I can never have sex and it be enjoyable. And I just was really, you know, hurt by seeing that a lot because that wasn't helpful. Like I want to provide hope. I want to talk about the hard things, but provide hope for people. And so that's one reason why, like, I'm really passionate about talking about this is because I've like been in the trenches of it, like experiencing painful sex for a long time. I've been in the trenches of going to pelvic floor physical therapy, overcoming shame about that, you know, using dilators, overcoming shame about that. And I just want other people to know that like, it's not a shameful thing to go through and that there is hope for healing. Because that, you know, talking about sex, you know, is like, there's a lot of shame builds up in it that have people experience. And I just want to help people like break free of that and not experience any shame around it anymore and have hope that like, they don't have to experience painful sex forever. They don't have to, you know, just sit in this like cycle of like, I'll never be able to have, you know, penetrative sex with my husband. I'll never be able to do this with my husband. Or, you know, I feel like I'm the worst wife because we can't do this. And let them know there's other ways to connect, you know, physically, intimately, there's other ways to do it. And it just doesn't have to be this way forever, that you're worth, you know, taking the steps towards healing. And so, yeah, that's a little bit of my story with it.
I love it. And I so relate. I've shared on this podcast a number of times, a number of different ways, little bits of mine and E's story with sex, which is really interesting because while he and I waited for marriage to have sex together, I was not a virgin. I had had sex with previous partners. And that's not something that I currently hold any shame around, but I think there was even, I think, a psychological element of shame around that I brought into our marriage.
Yeah.
But outside of that, for me, like the painful sex, I remember like as you were talking and I'm nodding my head going, I get it. Mm-hmm. Like I've been there. I so relate. I was remembering my first year of marriage where it's everything you just described. Sex was painful. I wasn't alluding to how painful it was. I think I let E in on it. Like, I don't think I fully hit it because there was a lot of nights or times where we were trying to be intimate and it ended in tears. So it was like obvious that like something was wrong.
Right.
But there were so many factors. And while I never received that diagnosis and I didn't go to physical therapy, I did, I was given by my OB a set of like dilators to help me learn. So I essentially did my own kind of improvise and did my own sort of PT using dilators from home.
And that's great.
So helpful. And
what
I will say is in addition to that helping, there was a huge mental thing for me, like a shift that needed to take place.
100%. And
honestly, like just to kind of jump to the hopeful side for someone listening who maybe is where you and I once were in the early stages of marriage, or maybe not even in the early stages of marriage, maybe you've been married for 10 years and you're still having painful sex. Regardless of at what point, what I can say is truly my sex life is really great now and it's pain-free and sex is pleasurable and it should be not just for the man. If you're in a heterosexual relationship, like it should be for you too as a woman. And
so, 100%.
Okay. So let's dive into, you've already named vaginismus, but what are some of the common reasons that sex is painful? What do you hear from people? I know this is something you've devoted so much of your life to.
Yeah. So vaginismus is a common diagnosis that that women get if they experience painful sex. There's also vulvodynia, which is just basically another diagnosis for painful sex. Vulvodynia is more of like, we don't really know what's causing it, but we just like know that sex is painful. So that's a lot of the definition for that. But besides like medical diagnoses for vaginismus or for any kind of painful sex, a lot of the common reasons that I have found that women will experience this is just if they experience a lot of shame around sex, like if they grew up hearing like sex is bad, like you shouldn't do it. Basically, you're going to go to hell. Sex is the worst thing in the entire world. If you are taught that, a lot of that is internalized. And I know that's a lot of my stories. Like I just grew up hearing that sex was bad. I remember like as a teenager, my biggest fear was getting pregnant just because people would knew that I had sex and I hadn't even had sex. Like I was doing other stuff and I was like, if I get pregnant, it's going to be the worst thing in the world.
Right.
And a lot of that just like carried over into my marriage because there's not a switch from sex is bad to sex is good. Like they explain that it's going to be. And so that's a lot of, from what, and just my experience of talking to people that I hear is like, they just have this like internalized view of sex and shame around their bodies as well. And there's also a level of, you know, some people who have been assaulted. So that's just trigger warning and talk about that for a second. That's a level of this as well. If you've had any kind of, you know, physical or sexual or even emotional, mental abuse to your body, I know that that's a common reason as well that people will experience this. And there's another thing that a lot of people have that they may not know about or even know to look up is if your hymen is covering the vaginal opening, that can also be a reason for painful sex. And I know that a lot of us are not taught anything about our bodies, especially women are not even taught the proper names of our body parts. So we don't even know to like ask our doctor these, you know, questions of like, is it my hymen? Is it, you know, this, or could I have an infection or what is going on? Like a lot of people don't even know like to ask certain questions. So those can be a couple of reasons why somebody would have this.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you brought that up about not even knowing necessarily all the proper like terms for our body parts, because I feel like it wasn't until I was pregnant and I was constantly, first of all, you go to the doctor more when you're pregnant than any other time.
Oh yes.
Right. And you're like cared for so much. And then you have like one postpartum appointment and it's like, wait, yeah, what? Something's really wrong with this picture. But anyways, it was during pregnancy that I would say for the first time I really got to know my body, which is so sad. Like it shouldn't require that for me to do that, or for our systems, medical systems, to be set up that way, or for our education around the body and sex. So love that you named that. Yeah. How many women, do you know like any stats or how many women experience painful sex? Because I agree with what you said. It felt so isolating when I was in it. And I look back and I just wish I could tell myself or show myself a picture of like what sex is going to be like today. Then I would be like, oh, somehow it will get better. And that gives me hope. And also you're going to meet a ton of women who also can relate and have gone through similar things. Yes. Is it super common?
And it actually is.
Is it more common in women who grew up with the Christian faith and purity culture?
Yeah. So according to the American College of Obstetrics, I can never say that word, obstetrics. You have to forgive me. I can never pronounce that word right. And gynecology, actually 3 out of 4 women will experience painful sex at some point in their lives. And then there was a study done by Sheila Ray Gregoire, who is an author. She's fantastic, about Christian women who experienced it. And I want to make sure that I get the stat right. I want to say it was 27% of Christian women had experienced, or 22% of Christian women have experienced it. And that's been a couple of years since she's done that study. So I'm sure there's some more updated stuff now. But so those are the actual stats that are out there. But I definitely think it's a lot higher than what's reported. Because a lot of people will feel shame about this. They don't want to talk about sex. They grew up, you know, in a you know, community where you don't talk about sex, or you don't go to the doctor, you know, when things are painful. Like I know that like in my family growing up, like we never went to the doctor unless like your arm was like hanging off, like broken. And so I know even as an adult, I was like, can't go to the doctor, can't afford it. And so I know that there's a lot of people who also are in that boat as well. And so I definitely think the number is a lot higher, the statistic is 3 out of 4, but I definitely think it could be higher. But 3 out of 4 is also very high to begin with.
Yeah.
So, but I know a lot of it definitely goes underreported for sure.
I have like what might be a silly question, but with vaginismus and your experience, because no two experiences are the same, so we'll focus in on yours for a moment. Was it just during sex and penetration that it was painful, or was it even like putting a tampon in? Was that possible?
So that's a great question. People with vaginismus can have different types of it. So it actually is very common for women who experience painful sex to not be able to have any kind of penetration, like tampons, menstrual cups, fingers, anything like that. I was actually able to use tampons my whole life. And so I was super shocked when sex hurt because tampons and fingers never hurt. And so that's why I was like, well, why is a penis hurting? How is that? Not how is that any different than a tampon, but essentially I'm like, something is going inside of me. Why is this any different than that? Like, why does that hurt? And so that's where a lot of, I think mine was very mental. Like therapy was a huge help in me overcoming this, because it like you were saying earlier, the mental aspect of it is so huge. But there are a lot of women who, if you can't insert a tampon or a menstrual cup or fingers are painful, that could be a sign that you do have vaginismus before you even have a penetrative sex.
Yeah.
So not a silly question at all.
Great. So that's so helpful. What should we do though? What would you recommend to a woman if sex is consistently painful? Like you said, you went like a year before you really started to seek out help. I also went way too long before I sought help. And like I said, cried myself to sleep and gotten so many fights with my husband when we were supposed to be in our newlywed bliss that first year over this struggle that we thought was just us.
Right. No, the first thing I would say to you is to stop having sex, which I know is like, what do you mean? Like, I'm trying to do this for my spouse. Like, stop having sex and talk to your spouse. Because if you continually try to have sex when it's painful, that is reinforcing that sex is going to hurt every time. That's reconditioning like your muscles to think like, oh, this is going to be painful every single time. And so we want to stop that cycle of like pain. And so first thing is to stop having penetrative sex, get really, you know, explorative with oral hands. There's definitely other ways that you can have sex. And so I would encourage you to still have that with your spouse. You can do it through other ways, but let's stop having penetrative sex first. And then the next thing I would say is definitely go to see your gynecologist, because like I said, there's a lot of like, you know, shame that can be built up and why penetrative sex hurts. There also is a biological side to it as well. And so it's very important, I think, to get your doctor to check on you and make sure that you don't have an infection, to make sure your hymen isn't causing any problems, and to get a referral, because a lot of times your gynecologist will give you a referral to a pelvic floor physical therapist, or will give you dilators like your gynecologist did. Now, unfortunately, there is a lot. I have gone through some not great experiences with doctors when it comes to this, because not as many are educated like you would think they would be. But I do think it's worth going to see your gynecologist. And then the biggest thing I would say is to go to pelvic floor physical therapy and use vaginal dilators. Pelvic floor physical therapy is such a godsend. I actually did a holistic version of it, which was huge for me. I went to one pelvic floor physical therapist. We just didn't have a great connection. And so I sought out a holistic one and it was perfect. I still see her to this day because we do acupuncture together. But she was fantastic. And pelvic floor physical therapy is such a huge help when it comes to overcoming this. And so I definitely recommend that.
So let's go there for a minute. I'm so curious. Give us a picture of, because I can imagine it's pretty intimidating going to a pelvic floor therapist for the first time. Like, I mean, not to be graphic, but you're thinking to yourself, are they going to like, not in a sexual way, but are they going to be like fingering me, like pushing around and like stretching me out? Like, what are they
actually
doing?
Are. I know. It's definitely like super intimidating. And so one thing I just would help, you know, our listeners think about is like, if you like break or mess up your knee, like let's say you tear your ACL or I don't know about stuff, you mess up your knee, you're going to go to physical therapy, right? And so this is the same kind of thing. Is like, I know that there's a lot of shame built up around our body parts, but if your pelvic floor is causing you pain, you go to the pelvic floor physical therapist. And so if you kind of can wrap your head around it that way, that definitely can help the like uncomfortableness and like shame that you may feel around it. But I totally understand. I was like terrified the first few times that I went. I was like, what are we going to do? But there's a lot of internal work and external work that a pelvic floor physical therapist can do. They're going to look at your hips. They're going to look at the fascia around your, just around your like pelvic floor area. They can see where your muscles are tight. But we did a lot of acupuncture actually before I even did any kind of internal work, like with her fingers, because my, you know, muscles down there were so tense all the time that we just needed to like regulate my nervous system. Cause my nervous system was just like going crazy. Anytime someone would touch me in any area, my muscles were just like freaking out and I would feel super tense in my pelvic floor. And so we did some acupuncture to help kind of like level out my nervous system. But then after that, she does like my pelvic floor physical therapist would take her fingers and like insert into me and see what muscles are tight. And it's really crazy because she would like, there's different quadrants of your, in your vagina. And so she would go to different areas and see like, oh, this muscle is super tight. And I could kind of could feel how tight it is. And then she would just do some work in there to like lessen up the tightness of it. And I know it can feel weird because you're like laying there and their fingers are inside you. And so I think that's why it's important to have a therapist that you connect really well with, that it's not just like weird. Like me and her would just talk about like what her daughter did at school that day while it's happening. Yeah. You know, I would talk about just like whatever's happening in my life, the lunch I had that day, just so it was not like we're just laying there in silence while she's
doing this,
you know?
And I can imagine that you could request a female versus a male.
Oh, 100%.
That,
oh, yes.
That, yeah. Like, yes. Or, you know, I'm not that males can't do this work too.
I would not have a male do that to me. Yeah. To this day, I only see female doctors. So just for comfort, I'm not a man hater. Men are great. It's just a comfort level, you know, you just want that comfort. But so that's what the actual therapy does look like. And they can also give you dilators to help you understand how to use those to help with the vaginal opening and getting your muscles used to insertion as well. And so that's a little bit of what the actual therapy is like. But it really does work. I did acupuncture for 4 months, and then we did that kind of therapy specifically for 3 months, and then I had pain-free sex. And so it's definitely possible. And I hear stories of women about, it's not just me, like about that all the time. Like, I went to pelvic floor therapy for a few months and now I've had pain-free sex. So it definitely works.
Well, and pelvic floor therapy is actually extremely common outside of the US, especially postpartum for women. I found that out like towards the end of my pregnancy. I was doing research, you know, I was at the end of the pregnancy with Shia, like I was nervous because every time I would laugh really hard or sneeze, I would like pee a little bit. And I was like, oh no, what is happening? And of course you read like, do your Kegel exercises, all this stuff. But like, anyway, so I knew that like after I had him, I would potentially want to look into something like that. And it was in the research that I started to realize this is like a really common standard postpartum practice for women in other countries.
It really is.
In Europe, it's super common, and it's just not.
It's like
here.
What everyone does. It's like everyone goes, like, that's just what you do. Like, it's not even a question. It's like, you have a baby, then you go to pelvic floor therapy. That is so not the case here.
Just to like re-strengthen the muscles, to regain confidence in your body's ability to, for example, not pee yourself when you sneeze. So, I love that. Obviously, we're talking about painful sex, but also this translates to so many other things.
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah. If you're experiencing painful sex, you probably have some other pelvic floor things going on as well. So it's all connected.
We'll get back to the conversation after this quick advertisement. Long gone are my days of shopping at Forever 21. Now that I know better, I try to do better. I try to shop ethically and avoid contributing to the world of fast fashion. And I'd rather purchase fewer high-quality pieces that will last instead of buying cheap, low-quality clothes that wear out after a few washes. This is just one reason I love Able. Able's high-quality leather, handmade jewelry, apparel, denim, and shoes aren't just investment pieces for your wardrobe. They're an investment in women around the world. Able takes their responsibility to their customers, the planet, and their social impact very seriously. So if, like me, you want insanely cute, lasting staples hanging up in your closet, and you want to support a mission that's greater than yourself, give Able a visit at ableclothing.com. Join myself and Able in moving fashion forward. Use code ALONGERTABLE15 for 15% off when you shop. Now, back to the show.
How do you believe that women should communicate with their partner if they're experiencing painful sex? And I guess, what do you wish you would have done differently in that area? Like, I know you and I both kind of have admitted you know, you kind of put on this facade, like you're enjoying it because you're telling yourself it's going to get better. It's going to get better. And something's wrong with me and you're embarrassed and it's shameful. Yeah. But if you could go back in time, how would you communicate about that differently? And what advice do you have for someone who maybe listens to this conversation, needs to go to their spouse and say, you know, maybe they're newlyweds or maybe they've been married for a long time. Maybe they're not married, but they've just been sexually together for a long time. And it's I need to tell you something.
Right. Well, first thing I would tell like myself is to not let other people tell me who my husband is or what he's going to do, because I was in my head so much of like, he's going to like not like me. He's going to be not attracted to me anymore if we can't have sex. He's going to go find sex somewhere else. And I didn't give my husband any kind of like credit for like that not being who he is. And so I wish I would have like really stuck with like, I know who my husband is. He's loving, he's kind, he loves me. Like, he only wants to be with me. I wish I would have leaned leaned into that a little bit more than like obviously what other people were telling me. But I just want to encourage you to like lead with vulnerability, lead with honesty. Because again, and I really wish that I would have talked to him sooner, because when I finally did share, I was like, so the reason I like put my head in my pillow every time is because I'm like trying to hide my face because I'm, you know, in a lot of pain. And he was just so heartbroken. He was like, oh my God, like I had no idea. If I would have known, we would have stopped if we wouldn't have had sex. And we did. Like after I explained to him what was going on, he never pressured me to have sex like that again. Or he would be like, do you want to try? Do you not want to try? Like, how can we help? And so he was so encouraging of like trying to get help. And so I want to encourage you just to lead with honesty, lead with vulnerability, you know, admit like, hey, this has been really hard. And this is something that I do want to make better. So I'm going to take steps to, you know, experience healing. Cause like I said earlier, if you don't really do anything about it, the cycle is just going to keep going of pain. Like it's not just going to get better on its own, unfortunately. And so I just encourage you, like when you do talk to your partner about this, just say things like, or, you know, already have decided, like, I am going to take steps towards healing. I think that'll be a big part of the conversation of like, hey, we're going to do something about this. It's not going to be this way forever. I believe it's not going to be this way forever. And so just really leading with honesty, leading with vulnerability, share that, like, you know, this is some, you value a sex life with your partner so much. And so, you know, you're sorry that it went on this long, but also you don't have anything to be sorry about. It's not your fault that your body's hurting. Yeah. Like, I don't want you to feel that way. But just like, you know, understand or just explain like we're going to do something about this. I love you. I value our sex life. I value, you know, how you feel about this. And so let's figure this out together and really go in with a teammate mindset. I think will be really helpful, but just leading with honesty, lead with vulnerability and lead with like hope for the future, I think is a really, really important.
Yeah. This is so great. A couple of rapid fire questions for you. First of all, like do a lot of insurances cover pelvic floor therapy? How is it super expensive or do a lot of people find that they can get discounts even if they don't have the right insurance?
Yeah. So I definitely recommend looking into your insurance to see what it covers. And there are a lot of places out there that will offer it on a sliding scale. And so if your insurance does not cover it, do not let that stop you. I would still continue to look at places because I know a lot of the places that I've worked with do not offer insurance because if they offer insurance, they have to charge at a certain level. But if they don't offer, if they don't take insurance and they can charge it at a sliding scale. And so there's definitely places out there that if you just say like, hey, this is what I can afford, can we work together? They will work with you. So insurance does cover this sometimes, but not always. And don't let that discourage you. Still continue to look. And it never hurts to ask, like, can we get on a payment plan? Can we do something about this? Because you never know until you ask.
Yeah. Another sort of rapid fire question I would have for you is, have you ever met someone who it doesn't get better? They've done all the quote unquote right things. Maybe you tried pelvic floor therapy. Maybe they had, they did regular therapy because again, there's such a mental component to all of this. Mm-hmm. Do you ever hear stories where it doesn't get better?
I do. Unfortunately, I have heard those stories before and it breaks my heart. And to that, I would just encourage somebody to maybe try to find a different therapist. Cause I know a lot of times, like, you know, not every therapy is the same. That's how it happened with me. I had to find a new one. And so if you are in that boat, cause I definitely have heard those stories before, I just encourage you to try and find a new therapist and definitely recommend regular therapy if you aren't going to that as well. Cause pelvic floor physical therapy and regular therapy I had to have those together for me to overcome this. And so definitely recommend trying to find a new provider if you are in that case.
Yeah. And my last like rapid fire question is ultimately in the space between painful sex and finding healing and experiencing hopefully pain-free sex on the other side, what are some ways that people can be intimate without penetration? Because I love that you said, and we've had other episodes on this podcast that say the same thing, like sex is not just intercourse with penetration.
Yeah.
So let's go there for just a moment.
Totally. Yeah. So I view sex as an umbrella term. Like sex is just an umbrella. There's oral sex, there's hands, there's anal, there's definitely things that you can do that will help you have that connection outside of just penetration. So I definitely recommend looking into having oral sex. See if that's something that you're interested in, you know, try it out. Definitely look into sex toys. There are no shame. I don't think there's any shame around using sex toys at all. And so look into getting some sex toys, see about that. There's this incredible website. I think it's hilarious, but it's called christianfriendlysexpositions.com. And I know it's funny. The reason it's Christian friendly is because they show like stick figures in different sex positions, but they have a whole part on their website that shows like ways that you can, you know, be in different positions that isn't penetrative sex. And I think that is a great tool. I know it's kind of silly with the name, but if you have a boundary, you know, in your marriage of not looking at porn or looking at other naked people, this is a great way for you to like get ideas of how to actually like have oral sex besides just like laying on your back, you know?
Yeah.
Like what are other ways we can do this? This website is like so great. And they have a lot of great like ideas and shows you like different positions and stuff you can get in and make it fun. Like switch up the place that you're doing stuff like that. Like switch up the location, switch up the time of day. I think scheduling is really fun. That can help keep some romance alive because you can like sex during the day, you know, talk about like get excited to have, you know, your time together at the end of the, or at the end of the day. Like it doesn't have to just be penetration. Like there's so many other fun things that you can do with hands, with oral, with anal, like just experiment in those ways. It definitely can keep that intimacy alive while you're going through this.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate your openness so much and your tips and just everything you shared, even that website, because I think there are so many of us who have struggled with this or are currently struggling with it. And number one, it's just so nice to like not feel alone and like
totally.
It's just you. I mean, that is always a huge relief.
Absolutely.
But then also to know that there is hope is huge. And my encouragement would just be that, you know, it sex, if you feel like you just don't even want it anymore because you've experienced pain for so long and experienced, you know, it ending badly and you're in tears, and I just want to say, like, don't force yourself to want it more.
Yeah.
I think you'll want it more when you find ways to actually enjoy it and experience pleasure. And
Absolutely. That
may not be through penetration for a long time. And that's okay. I know my husband, similar to yours, Hannah, is a really great guy. And he always had said to me, he's like, babe, I don't want to have sex if you're not enjoying it. Like,
right.
I don't 100%.
Yes. Like,
he's like, that is like the biggest like turn off for me is like,
right.
I'm not going to be able to enjoy this if I'm noticing you're tightening up and you're not enjoying it. So,
right.
You know, even as a couple, I think that's part of why that open communication can be so helpful is like, you can together discover like, okay, we found something that works. Like,
yes.
Not to be too graphic, but like oral sex, like that was the thing that was really helpful for us during a time where nothing else was working and
you
could still connect.
Absolutely.
So, I love that there is no topic that's off limits on this podcast and at our
Me
table.
Too.
And I appreciate so much you sharing openly. I think it'll be so helpful for a lot
thank
of our
so
listeners.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.